Good morning, everyone. I'm Ward Ahmed, and today I have with me
Abdul Majid. We live in Dubai. It's back to like winter because if you get used to of winter, then the 8 months, 9 months of summer, you would hate them. So it's better
winter.
To love summer.
No, I hate winter, by the way.
Yeah,
winter. No, I just naturally hate winter.
Ah, it's you grew up here, right?
It's just a depressing time of the year.
Goes down early.
Exactly.
At 6, you feel like it's 12.
Yeah, and you know, like, Majid, I'm one of those people, I like working out when there is heat.
Uh-huh.
Controversial opinion. But I actually like, I'm not saying I run right under the sun. Yeah. I'm not trying to get a heat stroke. But I actually like running when there's a bit of humidity. Because when I'm running, I don't, like, you know, I tried running this winter. I'm not enjoying it because I feel like my legs are shaking.
Yeah.
It's cold. I just want to be at home with some hot chocolate. I don't like winter. The problem with winter
that you're talking about, I guess, is that the warm-up time that you give your body to warm up and then you actually start doing
that sense of,
it gets longer, right? So
way too
my brother
long.
And I have seen a lot of people who have this solution for it, that they wear an extra layer of upper or hoodie so their body warms up quickly and then they do it. But yeah, everyone has a different preference.
I can't do it.
I only hate the dryness part, that you have to put so much lotion in everything because everything starts drying up.
I'm starting to feel it. Good season for my face, beauty industry as well. my face is like getting dry, and I'm like, what's going on? And it's not just that. Like, basically, Majid, I have low iron. I am anemic. So it's like running for me right now. It's not even an option at all. I'm literally, even when I'm wearing a jacket, by the way, I'm shaking. Like last night in my community, I cut my run short. I was like, I can't do it. And that's why I don't like the winter. It is a nice time of the year with all the festivities.
Yeah.
But I feel less productive. I'm not as productive as I am in the winter.
Yeah, it's lazier as well. I've realized in winters, you just want to like cuddle up in your
comforter,
be around the fire, drink your coffee, do nothing. But thankfully, you're in Dubai. Dubai has a longer summer than a lot of places, so it's good.
Yeah, it is really good. And starting with our first topic for today, Syria's new government has pledged to transition to a free market economy to integrate it into the global financial system. Now, this is very great news because we can see here that, you know, business-wise, financial-wise, you know, they're building their way back to being players in this field. This will be a free market system based on competition. Basil Hamwi, head of the Damascus Chamber of Commerce, told Reuters in an interview. This announcement came 3 days after the fall of President Bashar al-Assad regime, ending a 54-year autocracy. Now, this new administration, it will actually be led by the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham Group, which has promised to foster investments essential for rebuilding the country after 13 years of this very devastating war.
You remember we talked about it on Monday that Algeria reported, and my first concern always is during these or after these revolutions, they're calling it a revolution by officially now. So the economy suffers because there's so much going on that no one is really focusing on economy. And at the end of the day, the consumer, the last person who needs to put food on the table 3 times a day, needs to earn a living, all that is disrupted. So the whole economy being disrupted, it's bad for people at the end of the day. That's the main
idea.
Their
basic necessities aren't
being
met.
I really like it that these guys, Mr. Hamwi, giving an interview to Reuters and clearly stating that now we are going for a competition-based free market economy. We're not going to rely on the autocratic policies of Bashar al-Assad. It also mentioned that in his regime, a lot of restrictive trade policies were there. So they required complicated approvals for imports and enforced strict currency controls that delayed to the shortage of essential goods. So essential goods is the main like operative word here, that even milk, bread, anything that they wanted to import into the country, there was so much taxes and so much paperwork that it became difficult. Again, makes a normal person who eats, obviously everyone eats food, makes their life. And essential goods also includes medicine. So that also was a big problem in his rule. So look, good 3 days into it, they're already talking about economy.
Apparently, you know, 90% of the Syrian population was living under the poverty line. That's what's completely unfortunate about the entire thing. But just to expand on a point that you mentioned, you know, Majid mentioned this really good point about how Basil Hamwi said that, you know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to charge with a free market system based on competition. Now, if you take a look at the scholarly work that a lot of economists have developed on, you know, how countries can rise, especially after conflict, what you'll see is, especially in Dambisa Moyo's Dead Aid, she's very famous, Majid. She specifically said that for any country, after any form of conflict or revolution, as the people would like to call it, what basically causes countries to actually rise, it's not, aid can help, aid can support them. However, it's actually free markets. Yeah. It's actually participating in the market. It's actually prospering, you know, a competitive environment. Yeah. So just seeing this here, like, it gives me a lot of hope for Syria. And more than that, also, a Beirut-based Syrian businessman told Reuters that people are waiting to see if Syria will become an open society or if it will become an Islamic state.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand the concern with that, because sometimes certain ideologies can influence how business is being run.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if you have a more capitalist, if you're leading with a more capitalist ideology, you're going to invest more in infrastructure and things like that. If your ideology is more socialist, you're going to invest in education, and all these things. They are very good investments. Yeah. But what I noticed is that I do support capitalist ideology sometimes. When you actually invest in building the infrastructure, building all that groundwork, building the actual business market of the country, what that actually leads to is better education.
Better healthcare, better everything.
Of course, because like when you invest in something, you want something that's also bringing money in. You know, of course, education will bring money in, but that's more, it's for long-term incentives.
Yeah.
So I do understand that specific concern. And
moving on to another important thing that happened yesterday, Taliban finally made its debut on DFM. The good part about it is that it was the largest tech IPO in the Gulf region. It was one of the biggest tech IPOs throughout the world. The IPO didn't perform as well because I was waiting. There have been cases in the recent future, in recent past, where Lulu came on Abu Dhabi Global Market. They started at 2.04 and they ended at the 2.04 share price.
The same amount.
Yeah, all on 3 days. Talabat actually came down to 1.49 from 1.6, the high level of share price that they were subscribed at. Some of the people, a lot of stories about it say that a lot of people only invested to just cash out as soon as they could, soon as the trading started on DFM. But we saw a lot of festivity around it. That's the good thing
so
that I found.
So many announcements. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard about a company publicly listing this much in my life, Magic.
And we covered it so much. We covered Talabat, their growth, their numbers,
even
Delivery
the momentum
Hero.
For it, by the way. I remember even when Lulu IPO was actually being publicly listed, people were saying that, you know, don't worry about it. If you missed out on Lulu, Talabat is coming soon. Yeah. And by the way, just to add more information on what Majid said, is that when they listed, they actually raised $2 billion for this. So 7.5 billion dirhams in the initial public offering. However, do you think this is a good look for them, Majid?
It's not a bad look. It didn't go down to zero or one. 1.6 to 1.49, the market, I have it open right in front of me. It hasn't opened. It opened and from 1.49 in the very first minute, it has gone to 1.5. So we'll see its performance over 3 days. First 3 days tell you the whole story of how it will go. The good thing with Lulu was that they went flat throughout the 3 days. So it was 2.04, 2.04, 2.04, opening and closing both. But now they're trading around 1.9. So they didn't fall so hard.
They
it's 1.5.
I think I think you know what this was a case of? I think this was a case of people having way too high expectations for this. I think that's what happened.
The good thing is, we had this discussion with Rich as well, that money has already come in.
Exactly.
In the form of subscriptions. So that part is a very big success story, that they went from 1.6 or 1.5 billion to 2 billion IPO. They raised from 15 to 20%, remember? So they got the money from that. That's the good part.
They definitely did. And also, by the way, Talabat's equity actually went from 15% to 20%.
Yeah.
So it's not all too bad. Yeah. I don't think actually anything bad happened whatsoever. Yeah. I just believe that it's a case of, you know, when you build hype around something a lot, that's why in Life Magic, I never like to build hype around something
Funnily,
a lot.
It's open.
Never like...
Sorry, yeah, I just got go excited. Ahead. It started at 1.49 and now it's rising. It just opened the market. So I'm seeing the live updates. It's 1.5, 1.51, 1.52. And now it's come down to 1.5. So to be honest, what I've seen, what I've realized, just not an expert opinion, but an observation.
Yeah.
With Lulu as well, the share price was between the range of 1.9 and 2.04 or 2.1. So they got subscribed at the higher rate, but then eventually the market corrected itself and they went down to the lower price range at 1.9. They're still trading. I just opened them as well. So they're trading at 1.9. So they haven't gone down from the price range that they kept. Mm. They are within it, but they're just at the lower side. Subscribed at the higher side, gone at the lower side. With Talabat, their price range was 1.5.
It
and 1.6,
right?
Yeah.
I remember.
So 1.5 to 1.6, what I think will happen over 3 days is they'll go back to their lower range. They won't go down below 1.5, I hope. And I think, because it is a stable country and it is a stable economy. And then this product in a stable economy, it won't go down to 1.3 or 4. Not that bad, but it will stay on the lower side.
Do you think it's perhaps because they listed with Dubai?
No, the good thing is actually the whole idea, what I've realized throughout the IPO of 2 months or 2.5 months of coverage, it was actually a pretty great idea. The funny thing is they're headquartered in Abu Dhabi. They could have easily gone to ADX, but they chose DFM. This is the first tech listing, first ever tech listing on DFM. So they tried to add as many unique things to their IPO as possible. And to be honest, that got them the money in the subscription period. So they did good with that part. Now trading always is tricky. Trading all depends on the market. They actually published their numbers yesterday after the IPO. So that was one of the things. I haven't read the whole report right now. I didn't get the time. But they have published their third quarter earnings. And what I saw from the headline and the intro only, that they did good. So that sentiment combined with this, eventually they will like stabilize.
Hopefully.
They won't shoot to the stars.
Hopefully.
They won't go down the drain.
Yeah.
They will stabilize. That's
Hopefully
the main
they'll
thing.
Stabilize. Yeah. And for our second topic today, this one's actually a really, really interesting one. So the Qatar Energy CEO, Saad Al-Kaabi, has voiced strong opposition to the proposed European Union net zero policy that includes a 5% tax on global oil and gas revenues. So this tax, basically net zero policy, it was proposed a part of a broader strategy to enforce emissions monitoring across supply chains. However, the actual feasibility of it has sparked outrage.
Yeah.
And essentially at the Doha Forum, Al-Kaabi directly challenged the EU, asking, you know, are you telling us that you don't want our liquid natural gas into the UAE? I mean, into the EU. And his comments highlight Qatar's critical role as a leading supplier of liquefied natural gas to Europe, particularly amid the continent's push for energy scrutiny, security, and transition. Now, this over here, it's very interesting to me because actually, Majid, when the net zero policy came out, I was studying it in school.
Oh, nice.
Yes, and I had so many projects to do about it. You have no idea how much this specific policy has been nailed into my head. So seeing the fact that now it's coming alive, they're trying to implement it, and we're seeing that, you know, leaders in the Middle East are not very happy about it. I mean, I completely understand.
they're based on oil and gas. Their whole idea is based on oil and gas. See, the net zero policy, it's a really, really, really great idea. I'm not against it. I love it. The only problem I have with it is EU proposed it. So EU has to cut down on its energy demands. They are not cutting down on their energy demands. They're still taking oil and gas from a lot of people in the Middle East. To be honest, Middle East is the hub for this. And they buy it from them. And as Kabi said very clearly, that you want our energy as much as possible because you have energy needs and you haven't shifted to net zero yourself. But then you want to tax us on it as well. This is ironic. This is complicated. It's like I come to you, I need something from you. For example, I want a product from you. I pay 100 for it. And as soon as I pay 100, you're like, oh, this product did this to the environment, that to the environment. So now you pay 10% tax also. So I'll be like, bro, I paid for the product. So I don't want to pay extra.
To be honest with you, Majid, I just think this is a very prime example of, you know, players playing in it's just a really classic example of strategic interaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because what they basically did is they were like, you know what, like, we have our net zero policy, you know?
Yeah.
And especially with a policy with a name like that, it's, you know what I mean? It's like net zero, that name in itself, it's like we're doing something. We're doing something about the environment.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're, you know, they're bringing it, because that's how they usually respond. You know, by them bringing in this net zero tax, they were like, okay, you know, that means that we can go a little bit easy on our energy consumption.
Yeah.
We don't actually have to decrease it that much. Yeah. We can increase it because we're making up for it with something else. Because I remember when I was studying net zero policy, at the really basis of it, what they want is that they don't just want sustainable infrastructure in general for the world. They want sustainable activities for people.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you're somebody, you know, you're getting your groceries, your vegetables, your fruits, it's basically like, why don't you grow them?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Grow them in your backyard. So I think what they felt with that is, you know, because a lot of people in the EU are anyways gearing towards caring about the environment more, they're like, okay, since they're, since by doing all these activities, they're not actually polluting that much, we can, you know, we can balance that by increasing, you know, the amount of energy that we use in the oil. But this tax, it's so unfair.
Yeah.
It doesn't make them look
good. And he makes it very clear. That's the good part, that the Middle Eastern leaders, he's one of the, Qatar Energy is one of the biggest, it's a state-controlled company. So he's the CEO, and he was very clear that you want it, don't ask me for tax on sustainability or net zero, not like, applying net zero initiatives in my, if I'm producing it, obviously I can't go net zero. How do I produce oil and go net zero? So the point that you made about balance comes into play very, it's very important actually. You need to reduce the usage on useless things. Try to reduce it so you can, meet your energy demand.
Exactly, it's strategic interaction at its best.
That balance is very difficult. Asking people to give up so energy giants can make more energy and then other people can use it, the multinationals, the big corporations can use it to increase their output. It's unfair, to be honest, in that sense
unfair.
As well.
And
telling
me
to shun a plastic bag, but then increasing their carbon output, that's wrong. But that is the way right now of the world. We have to live with it.
Unfortunately, by the way, in this process, it's going to keep happening. Remember how I told you, Majid, about the Paris Agreement in the 2000s? So basically, the U.S., I'm not sure if the EU was involved, the U.S. and China, they agreed together to, you know, work towards an environmental goal. I believe it was to reduce emissions. But the second that Trump came in, the Trump administration pulled out of the deal entirely. You know what China did? If anything, China was happy about it. China was like, you know what? This is amazing for me. I'm going to start increasing my coal consumption because now I'm not held responsible for it. And so this is why when I take a look at this example, that's why it's so interesting. Yeah. It's, you know, they added this tax in while they're actually asking for, you know,
more oil,
it's,
more
it's
energy.
So funny. They're asking for a lot of oil while imposing this tax, but the reason why they're doing it and they feel confident doing it is because it's like, you can't call me out. I'm on my net zero. Do you know what I mean? I'm on my net zero. I'm applying it.
Funny story about net zero also is that this policy was devised and planned when the Russian invasion of Ukraine hadn't happened.
Oh.
So it this idea came before that. As soon as the Russian invasion of Ukraine happened, EU countries, a lot of them, started boycotting Russia's oil. And now they're in a problem. They need more oil from other people. And that there comes Middle East and America. America is one of the biggest. They just, like, 2-3 years ago, sorry if I'm wrong with that, they just found so many reserves, Americans. So they are becoming self-dependent on oil, and they're exporting oil. So America is self-dependent. EU, meanwhile, now has more demand from other countries, from Middle East, from this, from that. So their problem, their net zero policy is a problem for themselves. Now, because Russia's invasion of Ukraine is very clear, they're boycotting their oil. So it became a problem for themselves as well. So let's see how it goes. These things, the nation state level things, they take so long time to get decided on. But the good thing is,
I think the policy from these
countries, especially Qatar's very clear statement, this makes it clear to EU that either you cut down on your policy or remove the tax, it's unfair.
I think what's going to likely happen is that they're going to reconcile and they're going to have a discussion.
Find a middle way.
They will.
They have to. EU has to. Qatar has to boost up its production. They're boosting up their LNG production as well. Mm. The reports clearly suggested that they want to increase it. So that is like they know there is demand, more demand now because of the Russian boycott. So if there is demand, Qatar wants to make more oil, take out more oil. But EU also has a need for it. So they both will have to come together and find a middle way.
It's so interesting.
Geopolitics and business, when you combine them, it's the best thing, most interesting thing to talk about because it's so convoluted and complex that you start like attaching these strings and it becomes a web.
I don't think it's complex, to be honest with you, Majid. I just think that it's very obvious that the UK, you know, they're free riding on the fact that, you know, we have this amazing, very glamorous policy. Yeah. They're free riding on it. Yeah. They're taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's like the policy was created for climate change, but you're asking for more oil while taxing it too.
Yeah.
It really can't get...
They want the money, they want the oil, they want everything.
I swear, it really can get crazier than this. But you know what's actually really also really interesting, Majid, is that in the EU, they actually have a bunch of schemes like that. So, like, for example, they have something known as the European Union Emissions Trading Scheme. And so, basically, within that scheme, what basically happens is, like, when the Lufthansa, it invests in cleaner technology and it lowers its emissions costs, what happens is that its competitive player, British Airways, will respond to this and they'll actually emit more gases.
Yeah.
So, because of the fact that It just, to me, I see it as something so simple because it's like they all take opportunities in these loopholes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If, like, this person isn't doing too well with something, they're not doing their job too well with climate change, I don't have to do it too. Because in the end of the day, what it is that it's all a game of reputation.
Yeah.
It's all a game of reputation. And because, you know, they have this glamorous policy of net zero policy, nobody can really stand up and say the EU isn't doing anything for us. Do you know what I mean? But that's
but the main idea is EU also has a lot of policies for women empowerment, for education.
They do.
They have a whole listing of I don't remember it is color coded or graded. I remember it's A or B something. But if your country is trading with EU and you don't have a good record for human rights, for women empowerment, for child labor, for all these, they will tax you more. So some places EU policies have actually worked. The Asian countries, we have a lot of child labor problems, a lot of women empowerment problems. So when trading with EU, they have to keep like good record so that they get lower taxes and import and export becomes more profitable. So that way some policies do work, but this policy is clearly not working
and it will
not work because they didn't take into account this invasion of Ukraine.
And I think for once the UK can be happy that they had breakfast. Brexit. They could be happy for once that they left. And finally, for our last topic today, this one is a really exciting one.
I guess it's
one.
Just an announcement. We have 2 minutes left, so let's just announce this. Yeah.
Okay, so basically, Abu Dhabi's CYVN Holdings has acquired McLaren's automotive business. And And what I heard, this one really made me laugh. Somebody said that they took win on Sunday and buy on Monday way too seriously. So basically what happened is that they just have, you know, they've signed an agreement with Bahrain's sovereign wealth fund, Mumtalakat, to finally acquire McLaren's automotive business. And other than the fact that, you know, this is really great for Abu Dhabi, it's also showing that it's signaling that there are very strong ties between Bahrain and the UAE.
So there's just some other news that we should announce and then Worth can end the show. His Highness Sheikh Thanun bin Zayed Al Nahyan, chairman of UAE-based AI leader G42, he recently met with Tim Cook. We talked about that a lot on the yesterday's show. So just you can do a quick search and find the show from yesterday. Google's Quantum AI has introduced a new chip which can do a computation in 5 seconds, which the best supercomputer in the world right now would take 10 septillion years. So they've made that chip which can do that 10 septillion. It's like 18 zeros after 10.
Yeah.
That can do it in 5 seconds. So that's a breakthrough. And OpenAI has a new video generation software, Sora.
Yes. So, yeah. Thank you so much, guys. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV. We are on X, we are on LinkedIn, and we are on Instagram. Thank you so much for watching. Have a lovely day today.